Members, I will now call the Post-Secondary Education and Lifelong Learning Subcommittee to order. Kirsten, please call the roll.
Chair Mariano.
Here.
Vice Chair Mello.
Here.
Ranking Member Alexander. Representative Andrade.
Here.
Representative Arrington.
Here.
Representative Bell.
Here.
Representative Botana.
Here.
Representative Caruso.
Good morning.
Representative Fernandez-Barquin is excused. Representative Gottlieb.
Here.
Representative Harding is excused. Representative Mooney.
Here.
Representative Morales.
Present.
Representative Persons Malika.
Here.
Representative Plasencia. Representative Salzman.
Here.
Representative Tant.
Here.
Representative Williams.
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, members, and by your presence, we have a quorum. If anyone from the public wishes to speak today, please fill out an appearance card and give it to a member of our Sergeant's Office staff. Good morning, everyone. Today's meeting will focus on the broad topic of college affordability. Florida State colleges and state universities have some of the lowest tuition and fees in the nation and represent a real cost savings for students and families. Over the years, we have discussed other ways to lower costs, such as making textbooks more affordable through low cost, no cost, and open access resources. And today we will hear from a few of our institutions on other ways they are helping students complete their programs while also saving them time and money. A few of these ways include dual enrollment, early admission, the 2+2 transfer process, and student advising, which plays a role in helping students avoid situations that may lead to excess credit hours. With us today, we have presenters from UNF, Santa Fe College, and UCF, as well as the Board of Governors. And so first, we are going to start with Santa Fe. Dr. Brown, if you are here and would love to come up, thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm honored to stand before this esteemed group and even more excited to talk to you about affordability at Santa Fe College in Gainesville, Florida. The core of our college mission is to add value to the lives of our students and to enrich our community, and affordability plays a key role in fulfilling the college mission. I am going to share with you 11 ways that Santa Fe College is ensuring that higher education remains affordable. The first way is through low tuition and fees. Our tuition and fees for our career and technical programs is actually the lowest in the state. And as you know, these programs lead directly to industry certifications and to employment. The affordability of these programs allow the college to serve as an engine of social mobility, even as we meet the demands of local employers. And as the cost, as the total cost for the tuition in our AA programs, those transfer degrees, we still are below the state average for those. In fact, in our commitment to affordability, Santa Fe College has not raised tuition since 2015. A second way that we're ensuring affordability is through our dual enrollment program. The dual enrollment program helps make college affordable for over 1,000 families who participate in the program. Dual enrollment students start working towards their college credentials while in high school. They may work towards the CTE certificates or towards the associate's degree. And during the last year, 2021, dual enrollment students at Santa Fe College earned a whopping 16,375 total credits towards college. And by accelerating the college experience, these local families saved $1.2 million in tuition and $400,000 in instructional materials. That's $1.6 million that the college saved our local families through dual enrollment. And while all of these students have moved closer to their career goals, a significant number of them actually graduate with their associate's degree as they obtain the high school diploma. And we certainly celebrate 50 to 60 students each year. A third way that Santa Fe College is ensuring affordability is through a new program under our President Paul Brody called SF Achieve. And through this program, we have articulation agreements with the local school boards where we've embedded SF specialists or SF staff in each of the local high schools. And these specialists offer college preparation to all students. Dual enrollment is focused on those 1,000 students who enroll in the program, but SF Achieve is for all students within our local district, and the specialists provide curriculum on career exploration, degree planning, financial wellness, study skills, and help-seeking behavior. The program is focused on ensuring that students in our district begin college with clear goals and skills for success. We want our students to be exposed to high-demand, high-paying careers early on so that they can make an informed decision about their strengths, their interests, and their goals, and reduce the likelihood of excess credit hours. Students that have goals are more likely to finish quicker. And a fourth way that the college is ensuring affordability is through our 2+2 articulation agreements with universities. While Santa Fe College boasts the highest transfer rate in the state for transferring students to the University of Florida, we also have 2+2 articulation agreements with Florida A&M University here in Tallahassee, with the University of North Florida in Jacksonville, with the University of South Florida in Tampa, with the University of West Florida in Pensacola, and the University of the Virgin Islands. And we're in the process of finalizing an agreement with New College of Florida in Sarasota. Through these agreements, we offer options that appeal to all students because the different institutions appeal to different students. We provide motivation for continuing through college with guaranteed admission. These students are assured you will be guaranteed admission into the program that you choose, and it outlines clear pathways for seamless transfer, ensuring that students avoid excess credit hours. These agreements make college more affordable by saving the students on average $5,000 in tuition when they stay at the community college before transferring. It also reduces the time it takes to get to their bachelor's degree. A fifth way that Santa Fe College is ensuring affordability is through Career Coach. Career Coach is an online tool that allows students and the community 24/7 access to career assessments to find out what your strengths and interests are, to browse different careers. And for any specific career, the tool can be used to give current data on what the daily tasks in that career are. I met with some students just yesterday, and the student said, I want to be an engineer. What kind of engineer? And we looked up, what does an engineer do every day? What are the educational requirements for engineers? This is what engineers make when they have a bachelor's degree, when they have a master's degree, when they have a doctoral degree. This is the percentage of people in that field with those different degrees. These are the number of companies posting jobs in engineering in our area. These are the job postings that are posted. This is what the wage data shows, the average salary, the salary for entering engineers, and the salaries for seasoned members. And what makes Career Coach really amazing and powerful is that it then connects to the programs that the college offers so that the student can see, oh, I want an AA in engineering to start. And so that is the strength of the Career Coach, that the tool provides this information to make informed decisions, but also shows the programs that the college offers. And a sixth way that the college is ensuring affordability is through our advising. Every Santa Fe College student is provided with an academic advisor upon enrolling at the college. And that academic advisor is based on their program of study. So it's specialized where one advisor has all the fine arts students, or one advisor has all the engineering students, or an advisor has the health science students. And the students are encouraged to meet with their advisors before their first semesters and each semester thereafter. We invest in the professional development of our academic advisors, specifically with NACADA, which is the National Organization for Advising. But more importantly, all of our AA advisors are certified career facilitators. That is very important because we want students to not just pick classes that are based on the program of study, but ensure that the program of study is based on the career pursuits of the students. And in this way, we are helping students to understand why the course is necessary and also to avoid excess credit hours and stay on course. Also, the seventh way that the college is ensuring affordability is through our online educational planning tool. This tool enables all first semester students, as well as students beyond that, to create a comprehensive educational plan for all the AA courses needed to earn their credential. It shows the faculty and advisor recommendations of these are the electives you should take. So, no, that course that you like, that you thought was interesting, that might not be the best one. This is what the faculty and the advisors have recommended for the student, and it displays their progress toward degree completion and offers warnings to students and to advisors if the students get off track, if they're off plan in their coursework. And it helps students, again, avoid unnecessary coursework, reduce time to graduation, and avoid excess credit surcharges. Another way that we are ensuring affordability is through progress reporting. We know that when students are struggling with their coursework, they need to get feedback as soon as possible. And we try to get that feedback to students and advisors even before the first test. So during the second and third week of the semester, we're asking faculty to report on student behaviors that could be leading them to be at risk early on. Students are late, students are absent, students are not turning in assignments. And the faculty members will put in that notification that goes to the students as well as the advisors, and the advisors then reach out to the students, find out what's wrong, and offer the appropriate resources so that the students can stay on track and succeed. Another resource that we have that's ensuring affordability is our Learning Commons. The Learning Commons supports SF students with free tutoring and academic success coaching. We want all students to know that struggling is normal and seeking help when you're struggling is also normal. And so the Learning Commons becomes inevitable. You should be using this resource, but certainly those students that get a progress report saying that they're at risk, we're connecting them early on to the Learning Commons so that they can complete the course successfully and avoid having to repeat the course, avoid being in college longer than they need to be. These services are offered both online and in person, and we extend the Learning Commons hours during peak times. Another resource that we have that is ensuring affordability in college is the Counseling Center. Santa Fe College is one of only five of the state colleges that have a counseling center that is staffed by licensed mental health professionals. Every Santa Fe student is welcome to use the counseling center at no charge, and the counseling center provides short-term, solution-focused counseling. We take appointments and walk-ins. It can be done virtually or in person. And many students face anxiety or depression. They run into situations that would stop them from completing, but the counseling specialists help them identify and overcome obstacles so that they can stay on track with their courses and complete their work. Finally, the college has implemented several financial wellness initiatives. In fact, a few years back, we received the Chancellor's Best Practice Award for our focus on affordability, which lowered student debt at Santa Fe College by 18%. Financial aid provides all students who are eligible for loans the option to easily, electronically decline or reduce the loan. We've got messaging that's saying, don't take this loan if you don't really need it. Let's explore other options for paying for college. So this has helped. Just by having that button, touch of a button capability has prompted many to decline loans that they don't need. We've also changed our packaging process to ensure that students who do need loans exhaust their subsidized loans before getting unsubsidized loans, which are more costly. We also have a financial wellness committee that creates content to be used across the college to help students with responsible borrowing. And we've recently developed a financial wellness center in partnership with a local credit union. We're offering students the opportunity to meet in person or online with a financial wellness consultant who provides confidential support through finances, helping our students develop good financial habits like planning, budgeting, saving, and avoiding debt. As students prepare to receive financial aid refunds from grants and scholarships and loans, the staff in the learning, the staff in the Financial Wellness Center help them to plan a budget of how that money can last. In all these ways, Santa Fe College is ensuring that college is affordable for the families in our service district. Thank you for allowing me to present to you this morning.
Thank you so much. If you could just stay put for a minute, we probably have a few questions for you. And I did not lay out a clear roadmap in the beginning, but we've got about 20 minutes per entity presenting. So we've got about 3 or 4 minutes for questions. Are there any questions, members? Representative Andrade, you're recognized.
Thank you so much for the presentation. It was a great way to wake up this morning, for sure. But I did have two questions, if that's all right, Chair. The first being, I appreciated everything you discussed about affordability for your students. Is there anything y'all are doing on the like the textbook or instructional material side of that component?
Yes, sir. We actually have a textbook affordability committee, and we have made sure that we have open educational resources in the classes that our students are most likely to take. So our provost had outlined what are the top 15 classes at Santa Fe College, and we're ensuring that those classes have open educational resources and looking to expand that even more. And following the direction of the legislators, we don't allow faculty to just choose a textbook and change a textbook without going through a process to document that this is much needed.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Jerry. And that was an incredible answer. I really appreciate it. The only other question I had was on the career path side of it. What are y'all doing as far as like the workplace training or the partnerships with maybe local employers and so that people can get on-the-job training and experience?
I'm so glad that you asked that question. Under our president, Paul Brody, we just developed a new project called ACB Excel. And with this project, we are offering free training to families to help them get workforce training and to get a certification that leads to a job. And what's wonderful about this program is that it provides child care development at a local school. While the parents are learning, the children are also learning. So we're doing that, and we're also partnering with the employers in our local district to find out what they need so that we're ensuring that our students have the soft skills as well as the hard skills to prepare for the workforce.
All right.
Thank you.
We got time for probably one more question. Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Very briefly. I love your high energy as well as Representative Andrade. And my question is, I think you've really laid out an amazing program that your college has. And what I'm most intrigued by is that you haven't raised tuition since 2015. How do you remain competitive with the salaries of your teaching staff?
You're recognized.
Thank you. And I would say that our president has worked diligently with the legislators and with the with our finances as well as our local community to ensure that we have the funding to support our faculty and staff. And I believe that we did we just get a raise? And that has been a priority to ensure that we are maintaining the best faculty, attracting the best faculty to provide that for our students.
All right, last question goes to Representative Tant. You're recognized.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was really impressed by what you said about having the licensed mental health counselors on hand and being only one of five state colleges. How do you fund that? How is that funded?
It is through our operating budget. And so we are doing that in addition with advising. It comes with our operating budget. It's no outside funds. That is just a priority that the college made years ago and has continued to keep. We've seen that through COVID, student need in terms of mental health has only increased. And so we're very glad to be positioned to assist our students because it is a part of retention. If you find that you're running into an obstacle and you don't have the support or resources to overcome that obstacle, then you're going to stop going to school.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming today and sharing. It was a great presentation and appreciated the wake up as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. So next we will have Dr. Christy England, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs with the Board of Governors. Thank you so much for being with us again today. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Mariano and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you this morning about affordability in the state university system of Florida. First, I want to let you know that the national headlines about rising tuition and out-of-control student debt do not apply in the state of Florida. Thanks to many years of generous support from the Florida legislature and the governor, a bachelor's degree from any of the 12 universities in the state university system is indeed affordable. Your investments in performance-based funding, universities of distinction programs, preeminence and national rankings, and student financial aid are a critical part in making post-secondary education affordable in this state. Thanks to your support, public post-secondary education in Florida is indeed affordable. Affordability plays a critical role. Affordability plays a critical role in our recognition by U.S. News and World Report as the number one state for post-secondary education since 2017. We use a variety of metrics to monitor affordability in the state university system. Obviously, tuition and fees is one critical component of affordability. The state university system has had the second lowest tuition in the country for six consecutive years now. In addition, Florida is the only state that has not increased tuition at any point during the last 5 years. Another important measure of affordability is the amount that students invest in their own education. Total cost of a bachelor's degree is one of the performance-based funding metrics we evaluate. Each year, we look at the average total cost for students who completed a bachelor's degree. The cost is calculated by taking the four-year total of tuition, fees, and books, less grants and scholarships. In the last 5 years, our system has reduced the average cost to student by nearly $12,000. Our universities continue to do an outstanding job of delivering high-quality education while reducing costs to our students. The increasing investments in the state financial aid and performance-based funding over the last 5 years have played a significant role in reducing the cost to students. And as a result, Florida is in a very unique and enviable position. A third data point that we watch closely is the percent of undergraduate students who borrow each year. As you can see here, during the 1920 academic year, 70% of undergraduate students did not incur any debt as they invested in their education. The percent of undergraduate students who do not take out loans has been increasing steadily over the last 5 years. This metric is also heavily influenced by the increasing investments you have made in student financial aid and performance-based funding over the last several years. Another key indicator of affordability is the four-year graduation rate. Students who graduate within 4 years take fewer classes, which saves them money as well as time, and directly contributes to affordability. Our four-year graduation rate has increased 12 percentage points over the last 5 years. That's the equivalent of 5,400 graduates annually. As a result, we are now within 6 percentage points of the board's 2025 strategic plan goal of 65%. This rapid rise reflects the university's hard work and commitment to student success and timely completion. Some additional context as to why four-year graduation rates are important, I think you might appreciate today. First, other states and systems are still focused on six-year graduation rate, which is the commonly used metric that's been in place for decades. However, our state leaders and the Board of Governors showed incredible initiative and recognized the importance of timely completion relative to affordability when four-year graduation rates were incorporated into the board's 2025 strategic plan and into our performance-based funding model. This is a real point of pride for Florida. Second, by helping students complete a bachelor's degree within 4 years, they can enter the workforce sooner and help us all better respond to the business and industry needs in the state of Florida. The final indicator that I want to share with you is the percent of bachelor's degrees awarded without what we call excess hours. Each academic program has a specified number of credit hours required in order to complete a degree. The majority of our bachelor's degrees require 120 credit hours. Knowing that some students may change their major during their second or third year, or students may pick up extra courses here and there for various reasons, we do this calculation and allow students to take up to 110% of the required hours. So if a program is 120 credit hours, a student can take up to 132 hours, and we consider them as having completed a degree without excess hours. Keeping the number of credit hours to a minimum is critical to affordability. The fewer classes a student takes, the less it costs them to earn the degree. The Board of Governors has been tracking this metric since 2009. And as you can see, over the last 5 years, the percent of students graduating without excess hours has increased from 72% to 82%. These measures together show that a public post-secondary education in Florida is in fact affordable, and it's a good investment for both the state and our students. I understand that following my presentation, you will hear from some of our universities regarding their efforts to ensure the success of Florida College System students who transfer to one of our public universities. This has been a high priority for the Board of Governors for several years. During the last 4 to 5 years, the board has spent a significant amount of time discussing ways to improve the success of transfer students. To set the stage for the conversations you are about to have with the University of Central Florida and the University of North Florida, I will provide a brief overview of the board's activities in recent years. From March 2016 to January 2019, there was a board committee dedicated specifically for the purpose of conducting a comprehensive review of 2+2 articulation, which is how we refer to this transition of students with an Associate of Arts degree from a Florida College System institution who transfer to a state university for the purpose of completing a bachelor's degree. The committee recommended 3 strategies that were adopted by the board in 2019 to help further improve the success of these students. The first strategy was to encourage all of our state universities to improve and expand their local 2+2 programs. These programs are typically focused on specific fields of study and have additional support systems in place at both the state university and the college system partner institution in order to assist students in their journey. In the 12 to 18 months following the adoption of this strategy, programs were expanded so that all state universities have at least one program with a college system partner, and all college system institutions have at least one program with a state university partner. A second strategy was to identify key components of the most effective 2+2 programs. We now require the state universities to conduct regular self-evaluations of their programs. The state universities evaluate academic and cultural transitions, administrative oversight, and data used to monitor and enhance student success. All state universities conducted the first evaluations in the winter of 1920, and the second round of evaluations will be completed during the first part of 2021. The third and final strategy adopted by the Board of Governors is to regularly monitor critical data points at the system level and at individual institutions. Board staff regularly monitor applications, admissions, and acceptance rates for AA transfer students. In addition, in October of 2019, the Board of Governors added a new metric to their 2025 strategic plan that focuses on the three-year graduation rate of AA transfer students. And in this year's accountability plan for the system, we reported that that rate was at 62%, which is up 5 percentage points over the last 5 years as a result of the board's increasing focus on this area. So in summary, a public post-secondary education in Florida is affordable, and we are working hard to ensure the success of our transfer students. Madam Chair, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you so much for being here today. Before we take members from, questions from the committee, I have a question regarding excess credit hours. You referenced the 110% limit. However, for students that were enrolled after 2019, that is now 120%. How do you see that impacting the amount of students that are incurring excess credit hours?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your question. I expect that we will continue to see good performance on the percent of students without excess credit hours. This has been something that our institutions take very seriously, and they've worked really hard to improve and enhance advising to make sure that students have the best guidance possible and to help them keep on track through tutoring and mentoring and other kinds of support. So I expect that we will continue to do well.
And then just a quick follow-up. Do you have any prediction on the number of students in between that 110% and that 120% threshold, and how many students are going to be not incurring in the future due to that increase?
I didn't bring those numbers with me, but I'd be happy to provide those to you later this week.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Members, any questions? Representative Botano, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the look into the Board of Governors. Quick question here. With respect to the total cost of degrees after financial aid, textbooks have gone through the roof over time. What is the Board of Governors pursued any strategy about keeping those textbooks costs low?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's an excellent question, and I have some really good news on that. We have been looking at textbook affordability for several years, and we have several initiatives that have been in place over the last 3 to 5 years. And in fact, we also do an annual textbook affordability report that I could share with this committee later today as well. In our latest report, we found that 60% of course sections offered during the last academic year had instructional materials that cost $20 or less across the board. And a lot of those were actually no cost to students. We've been really pushing faculty to make use of open educational resources, and they've been doing a fantastic job of doing that and keeping the cost low. So I would say we're on top of that. But if you need more data, I'm happy to provide it.
Representative Andrade, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. and thank you for the presentation. I was curious to get some context about the differences between the strategic plan monitoring the three-year graduation rate of AA transfer students versus the 2+2 program, and whether or not, you know, that data is beginning to start tracking, you know, be incorporated into the four-year graduation rate monitoring system.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excellent question. The inclusion of the three-year graduation rate in the strategic plan was based on extensive research that we did in collaboration with the college system that shows that that at the time, the students were coming in without some of the necessary prerequisites. They tended to start out part-time before switching to full-time, and that we found that it was taking them another semester or two to get through the system, which is why we focused on three-year. In our performance-based funding model, we do have a look at the two-year graduation rate, and so we are working very closely through the 2+2 enhancement programs that you'll hear about in a little bit to try and move the needle on the two-year as well as watching the three-year. So we're working on both in tandem. Two is obviously ideal, and the 2+2 enhancement programs go a long way to helping with that because they get additional advising and support that makes sure they come in with the prerequisites that they need for engineering, for instance.
Any other questions? Representative Mello, Vice Chair Mello, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. My question to you is with regard to work-based learning opportunities, to what extent is the Board of Governors going to promote those opportunities?
Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'm really glad you asked about that. For the last 2 years, we have had a task force on academic and workforce alignment. It's basically another board committee. And that's been exactly the focus, has been to talk about how can we better prepare our students to be successful in the workplace. And also, we've been meeting with industry leaders to talk about where they see the greatest needs for our graduates. And the final report will be coming out in the January board meeting, and we are talking about several recommendations around increasing the opportunities for students to get more experiential learning. Internships is the most obvious component of that, but there are other opportunities for them as well in research labs, volunteer and service learning, and other ways. And so that's something that we've talked a lot about over the last year, and I expect that over the next 12 months we'll see a lot of activity on an effort in that, and that's something we'll be monitoring closely going forward.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yep, you're recognized.
Thank you. Madam Chair, follow-up question is, will they be paid experiences?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Some of them are. The vast majority, I think, are the employers are finding that they almost have to pay students to get them to come because so many employers are paying. I think we still will see a handful of unpaid opportunities, but my sense is that the vast majority of them are paid opportunities.
Great. All right, seeing no further questions. Oh, yep, Ranking Member Alexander, you're recognized.
Madam Chair, and good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm well, thank you.
Are you seeing a common trend within the SUS where institutions are strongly encouraging students not to double major within the confines of the performance metrics? I've had quite a few students say that they wanted to double major in a program or two programs that were applicable to their career path or interest, but they were strongly encouraged not to do so. Do you have any information on that?
You're recognized.
Thank you. That's an excellent question, and I personally have not heard a lot of chatter along those lines, but I think when you have an opportunity to talk with UCF and UNF staff, that would be a great question for those folks.
All righty, thank you so much for coming today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next up, we will have Dr. Challey, the interim president of UNF. Thank you so much for traveling to be here with us today. We really appreciate it and look forward to your presentation.
My pleasure. So, Chair Mariano and members of the committee, what a real privilege for me to be able to come and talk to you today and talk about what UNF is doing to increase affordability and working through articulation. I am the interim president of UNF. I've been the interim president for about 60 days, okay? So, just saying, I've been at UNF for a long time, but I've got a lot of colleagues out here. Just in case I don't know every single thing that I need to be talking about. Hopefully I do. I think what you'll hear as I talk is a lot of the same strategies. It was so nice to hear what Santa Fe is doing and realize that in a lot of respects we're doing the same thing. But what I want to be able to share is how we're implementing them at the University of North Florida. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is for affordability in general. And just like Santa Fe said that they hadn't raised tuition since 2015-16, well, here we are. In fact, you will see we haven't raised tuition, $142.70 per credit hour, but we also decreased fees by 15 cents in what year was that, 2019-20. So we've worked really, really hard to provide a quality education to our students at a low cost. I also want to talk a little bit about our articulation agreements. And one way that we do this is through dual enrollment. You heard them talk about that in Santa Fe. So these are the counties with which we have dual enrollments. And what that does is it provides high school students and also students who are educated at home an opportunity to earn some college credits. In order to be admitted, it is intended that the student will have a 3.0 GPA, unweighted GPA. And what this chart shows is that when students come to us with some dual enrollment credits, they do really well in graduation. So if they have 20 or more credits in the years 2016 to 2020, those graduation rates, and that's four-year graduation rate, would be at 62%, which is really higher than what our regular four-year graduation rate is. If they actually earned an AA through this dual enrollment, so that's quite an achievement. And as you mentioned, I think you said you had 40 or 50 of those students every year that come to Santa Fe. Well, that would mean in our university, they would be graduating at an 82.2% rate. And, you know, that is a great, great graduation rate. You know, something else that you might be interested in terms of how this dual enrollment works, the parents or the students themselves don't pay tuition and fees for these courses. Instead, it's the state school, the county school systems, or in some cases, the school itself that pay the tuition and any fees related to the course itself. I found that really interesting as I learned more about that the parents, what a way to decrease the cost of a college education. Articulation agreements. Yes, we have articulation agreements. And yes, Santa Fe. We do have an articulation with them, agreement with them. We have one with Florida State College at Jacksonville, also St. John's River, and Florida Gateway College. Sometimes our students earn associates in science degrees, and we have we call those career ladder programs. And especially at UNF, we offer career ladder programs in nursing, in business management, and in criminal justice. Those are programs that have very specific prerequisites. Nursing's probably the best example. Very specific prerequisites, and so the students can easily move from an AS, from a community college, into a BS program at the University of North Florida. This is a somewhat unique articulation agreement that I wanted to tell you about. It's an agreement that we have with Daytona State College. And actually, we're working to make this also work with St. John's and just a second, I'll remember what it is in a minute. Which one? Yeah, St. John's. Yeah, hold on. Daytona, St. John's, and FSCJ. Those are the three. My apologies. I'm sorry. So basically, what we've done with this is the students can be enrolled in a Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree. You know, there's such talk today about the need for nursing and the need for healthcare. And so we've worked out an agreement where they can actually earn 9 credit hours, so it would be 3 courses, in their Bachelor of Science of Nursing degree that then count towards either a Master of Science or a Doctorate of Nursing Practice. So then when they graduate with that BSN, they have 9 of the approximately 40-some hours, for the master's at least, that they would need to earn for their graduate degree. And, you know, what that does is it creates strong leadership in healthcare, in nursing services especially. But, you know, another problem that we've had is finding adequate nursing faculty. Exactly. So this is a way that we can maybe entice students to not only provide leadership roles in healthcare organizations, but also entice them to consider some nursing faculty opportunities. I want to tell you about our advising. I think we have just a fabulous advising services. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to tell you a little bit about this. So the Student Academic Success Services are actually accredited at the University of North Florida. And what we do is we identify classes that students typically have difficulty in. We call those, they have high DFW rates. In other words, the students earn a D, there's an increased incidence of students earning a D, earning an F, or realizing, this is not looking good, I think I'm going to withdraw. But when that happens, of course, it costs more for the student and they have to retake that course. So these are ways that we have identified early on ways that we can give students help. And look at that second bullet. I think that's really exciting because if you regularly go to some of these some of these tutoring sessions, the students we have found earn a half to a full letter grade increase. And their fail reduction, you know, the possibility that they're going to fail, it reduces by 70%. That's really significant. If you are a student who is committed and really wants to earn some good degrees, so you can see how many students use these SAS services over 40,000 times, and 7,000 students at UNF have used those services. We also have some really strong academic advising, and I want to tell you a little bit about that. We have one advisor for about every 440 students. I wish we had one advisor for about every 400 students. We're not quite there yet, but hopefully we get there. And each advisor averages not quite 2,500, 2,200 student advising visits each month. So they're pretty busy. You know, they're really pretty busy. Our advising, though, it's not your grandmother's advising. I say grandmother because I'm a grandmother. It's not your grandmother type of advising. We really work with our students. We go over the courses that they need to take, and we want to make sure that they know in this semester these courses are necessary, and the next semester those courses are necessary. We especially help them a lot to prepare for registration. Can you imagine how busy advisors are right now? Because this is the registration time. And we want to make sure that every course they enroll in truly counts towards that degree that they are aiming toward. Another thing that we do three times during their four-year time with us at UNF is we look at the group of currently enrolled students, and we make sure they're on track. So, for example, students that were admitted and say they want to be an engineering major, we make sure that they are indeed on track to be able to succeed in that engineering degree. And we go over that with them at the end of their first year. We also go over it at the end of their third year, and then the semester before they graduate. Again, just to be sure that they've got all the right courses. The final thing that I really want to talk about, to be honest, this is somewhat intrusive advising. Now, we don't really want to put that in our catalogs or anything like that. but what it is it's being proactive. You know, we don't wait for the students to come to us. If we see they're on probation, if we see that they're not doing well in the course, maybe it's early in the course, maybe it's at midterm, we reach out to them. And using all these mechanisms, it really has increased how quickly our students get through and improved our four-year graduation rate. We have another group of advisors that we call transition advisors. I don't know what it was like for you when you first went to college. Some people go to college and they know from day one what they want to be. Some people go to college and graduate and aren't really sure what they might want to be. But for those students that aren't so sure, we have advisors that can really help them determine what would be a good major. Another time when these transition advisors are so helpful is if we find out that a student says, for example, I want to be a nurse. Well, you know, to be a nurse in today's world, you really have to have high grades. It is incredibly competitive. And if we recognize that this student, you know, despite the desire, just most likely won't make it into the nursing program, then we have them work with a transition advisor to find something that might be of interest to them, or find a way that they might be able to achieve their goal of being a nurse, but maybe not as directly as they were hoping for. So this shows how well these things have worked for us. So you can see that since 2009, our four-year graduation rate has gone from 26.5% to 48.3%. That is a big change, and we're really proud of that. But Dr. Englund will tell you, that's not good enough, Pam. It is not good enough. And you know what? It's not. You heard her talk about how the ultimate goal in 2025 is 65%. We have a ways to go. But yet this is an 87% increase in four-year graduation rate. Look at the time to degree. So we've gone from 4.8 years to 4.3 years. So that's really a semester almost that we've cut off. And of course, that's going to decrease the cost of their college education. This is just some examples of excess credit hours. We've dropped by 14% since 2015. The number of students with student loans have gone down by 10%. It would be wonderful if we could drop that even more. You know, I could talk about a lot of other things that we do that I think decreases the cost. I thought it was such a great idea to talk about counseling, to talk about the importance of financial aid, and I know that's something that all of the 10 state university systems are committed to. But I think with that, I imagine that my time is up, except I had to add one more slide. I am so excited that UNF is a university of distinction. Thank you. And this is an example of a relationship that we have with FSCJ, Florida State College in Jacksonville. We're actually sharing a building. They weren't using the building all that much. We really needed the building. So this is a picture of the former president, David Szymanski, the taller man, and the FSCJ president, John Avendano, at the ribbon cutting. We're sharing this building where we are offering nursing courses because there's such a huge need for nursing, and it's just an absolutely fabulous arrangement between the state system, the state college system, and us, part of the state university system. So with that, I will end my presentation.
Great. Thank you so much. Before I open up for questions, I have a question for you.
Sure.
I was fascinated by the number of student appointments one advisor has a month. Just doing some quick math, it seems like the appointments would be 5 minutes. I mean, can you kind of walk through how one advisor that has 440 students can have, you know, 2,200 appointments in a month? Well, yeah, it's an average, but
it's an average. So actually, when I did the math, I was going to encourage them to work more. So let's go back here. So if you consider, if you just look at work days, that's what I did wrong when I first did it. I divided it by 30. So it would be more like 22 days. Most of the appointments are at least 15 to 20 minutes. You know, students come in, they go over their program of study. They would just call for questions. So, I mean, I think it's a big combination that sometimes they might be really short. Good point. Definitely. Thanks. Good point.
Representative Williams, you recognized for a question?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the affordability chart that you have for completion, mm-hmm. On year 2014 to 2018 to 2015 to 2019, according to your chart, you had approximately 2% increase throughout the years from 2009 to 2020. but those particular years you have a jump approximately 6%. Could you tell us why the jump is so different?
So you are looking, is this a chart that you were looking at?
Yes.
Okay. So you're asking how we started to improve the graduation rate? Is that what you're saying from
according,
those years?
According to the...
You recognize.
According to the chart, according to the chart, every year you have approximately 2% increase. But for the year of 2018 through 2019, you have approximately 6% increase. So from 2% every year throughout then, and those years you have a 6% increase. So I was wondering what was that big jump.
Thank you. I'm sorry I didn't understand at first what you were asking. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to answer that. It's really because we got on the bandwagon to do everything we could to help students get out in a timely manner. We increased and improved our advising services. That's when we really started to work so much with SAS, the Student Advising Support Services. We increased our student counseling services. We also put a lot of resources into financial aid. So I think it was a combination of a lot of hard work, and I have to be honest, it was certainly motivated by the performance metrics, performance-based metrics. Great. Thanks for pointing that out.
Thank you. Representative Tant, you're recognized for a question.
I actually just have a comment. My son graduated from UNF, and he is in graduate school in George Mason. He went to UNF. He graduated in 3 years. Yeah, so he's helping drive your numbers. And he told me, actually, I was texting him, like, tell me how often you met with your advisor, because I was curious about it, because he's a self-starter. And he said he met with his advisor every single semester, and he says, that's how I was able to graduate so early, Mom. He also said that in his graduate school at George Mason, it's not nearly the access to resources, registration, supports, and advising that he received at UNF. Also, he is studying criminal justice and getting a master's in that. And he said that because of UNF's program and the advising and the professors, he was able to do a very high-quality internship with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office that he never could have gotten probably anywhere else. And so I do want to point out, I just want to say
thank
that
you.
We are a testimony to that. And it was unexpected because I was like, how'd you do that so fast? So this is a kid who got it done. And he
thank
also,
you.
At the same time he was working, he was also a communities and schools volunteer as well as a big brother, big sister. So this is a kid who loved being at UNF. And he said the library, the virtual resources, the registration supports, and especially the advising was key.
Awesome. Thank you. Ranking Member Alexander for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would like to make a very brief comment, if that's okay. It'll be very brief.
All right, we're low on time, so let's try to keep it brief on the comments.
Can I wait?
You can go ahead. Just be brief, please.
Okay, I'll be very brief and succinct. You know, UNF is an amazing institution, and I want to just put this on the record, and I want the members to understand, because there's a reoccurring theme throughout the state university system where specific institutions are doing more with less. And I know the president's not going to say that, and I understand her situation. And so when we start talking about all these programs and all these tackling, blocking measures to help students matriculate through the institutions, you know, they are receiving less resources compared to other institutions, although they're being compared within the same metric. And so within a span of 5 years, almost $1 billion, $970 some million was allocated. UNF received like $11 million. Okay? And so we really need to have an even broader conversation. I think this is great. I know you're talking about all the great things that you're doing and you're trying to meet this goal and meet this expectation. But when the rubber meets the road, when you have a certain yield and you have specific resources, it puts certain institutions like Florida Gulf Coast, UNF, University of West Florida, FAMU, and a couple other schools at a major disadvantage. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it's the truth.
Alrighty. I understand.
Well, any questions, members? Representative Salzman, you recognize, and this is the last question. We're going to move on to UCF.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So your slide on general affordability shows the tuition and fees. Do you know how the cost of textbooks has changed over the same time period? And what has UNF done about the textbook costs? How do you keep them low?
So I think that Dr. England described some of the same strategies that we have gone through. I don't exactly off the top of my head know how the textbooks, how they have decreased in costs. But we work very, very hard with companies. There are some programs that have been able to buy their entire curriculum through one company, and then they give us a really good rate on that from that company. We also look at what is available free, what you can do online. There are some in faculty who because of their concern about textbook affordability, are actually putting their own packets type things together, not breaking copyright laws, but putting it all together. So yes, that's really important because textbooks could be quite expensive.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for traveling here today. We really appreciate it, and safe travels back. All right. Last but not least, we have my alma mater, UCF. Go Knights. I'm not sure if Janet, if you want to introduce, or if you want to start with Dr. Kavanaugh. Or however you want to organize.
Good morning, Chair Mariano.
Good morning.
I'm Dr. Gordon Chavez. I'm the Associate Vice President for Enrollment Services. I'm going to begin. We have three representatives this morning for you, and of course, good morning, other members of the committee. I meant to say go night, Chair Mariano. So each of us will present two or three slides. We are mindful of the fact that we have about 5 minutes, maybe 4 minutes, so we'll keep to that. We want to thank you for inviting us to share good news about the positive impact that affordability measures and efforts, as well as articulation agreements, have had upon keeping costs affordable to obtain an undergraduate degree for Florida residents. Dr. England did a wonderful job, as she always does, in giving you the overarching strategies and some of the outcomes that we follow as an SUS institution. And Dr. Challey also shared some information about what is specifically going on at the University of North Florida. But we want to talk to you specifically about what's happening at the University of Central Florida. So through the generosity of Florida Legislature and through the Board of Governors to support programs like Florida Bright Futures and the Florida Students Assistance grant funding, coupled with the fact that there have been no tuition increases since 2015 in the SUS system, the average cost to UCF students shown here has significantly declined since 2015. And this is an average cost to students to obtain their degree. We do also show two other metrics here, and it's about the average credit hours that students take to obtain that degree and the average time to complete that degree. The next slide shares some information with you about articulation agreements and accelerated mechanisms. So through these efforts, both through dual enrollment and through early admission, which most of the students who participate in those programs at the University of Central Florida are high school students in our local area. It allows high school students to obtain college credits prior to achieving their college degrees, thereby continuing to reduce the cost to obtain a college degree. Our next slide will introduce my colleague, Pam Kavanaugh.
Good morning, Madam Chair and fellow Knight and the rest of the committee. Thank you for having us. We're thrilled to build on the discussion about affordability and articulation, in part through a story of our work with Direct Connect UCF. As many of you are aware, we're in our 16th year of this program. It is an extreme example of the power of partnerships with our state college feeder institutions, particularly Valencia College, Seminole State, Eastern Florida State College, Lake Sumter State College, who am I forgetting here? College of Central Florida and Daytona State College. So it's, you know, I feel as though I have to have them on my shoulders here to even talk about this program, because it is truly a partnership effort. And everything we do is in partnership. And so anything you ever hear us talking about Direct Connect to UCF, you'll see all of our names included in that. And that shows how the culture of creating a partnership can really, really enhance the work that we do. And if you think of 60,000, it's really 63,000 now, degree earners through that program over the last 15 years, now that we're starting our 16th year, it's pretty impressive. And when you think of the cost, kind of to Dr. Brown's, I was doing a little math there. If you look at the tuition of 2 years, the difference of having those students finish an AA at a state college and then come to the University of Central Florida, it's over a savings of over $6,150. So if you multiply that by 60,000 degree earners, that's $329 million savings. Think about the affordability. And Florida has been on the cusp, so the leading edge, you know, with our Common Course numbering and the work that we've been able to do to really create these seamless pathways for these students. And you can see the access added to the affordability, the articulation, just through the mix of students and the diversity of how that pipeline brings inclusive excellence to the university. Not only through our racial mix, but look at our Pell eligibility students that are coming through, as well as our first-gen students who are truly, and I get chill bumps, not only thinking of Representative Tant and her testimony of her son, but to think of these students who are truly getting life-changing degrees that are changing their families for generations to come. I'm a first-gen student. And then changing their communities, because most of them stay in Florida, and really making an economic imprint on their community. So with that, we know that this has been a huge opportunity in affordability for our students. As well, we know that the Direct Connect to UCF program builds on our timely completion, not only through the elements of that program, where it's built and operated through a true consortium. So our presidents meet annually. Our chief student affairs and chief academic officers meet on an annual basis to help direct the efforts and the strategic initiatives for our student success and these transfer students who are coming in and the transfer-bound students coming into the university. To think about the work that we've done in curriculum alignment, where we've had over 400 faculty members that come together, and honestly, they're coming voluntarily. They come on Fridays when most of the state colleges are closed. You know, they have over 50 courses that we're doing and aligning on now 10 different disciplines. And so for 15 years, when they're looking at the most fascinating data. If you ever wanted to really get into some other data, they're looking at course sequencing data. What does the impact of a gap term have on their progression and their success rate? Sitting together, it's a together thing, sitting together to really align not only curriculum and outcomes for courses so that wherever they take the course, it is a seamless opportunity. And so it's really pretty powerful. And so you can imagine the sophisticated data that our teams have had to really develop and the dashboards that we share across all institutions. And it used to be, as you might imagine, institutions only wanted to share their data with us. And now it's an open book. We share data across all and finding ways to find meaning and what this means for student success and progression. In addition, we have work groups and we have convenings of college access, we call it a College Access Summit, and work groups. Not only our data group meets, help develop our reverse transfer process in the state that's been a leading edge and now really an example for us. And then a few years ago, much like what Dr. Brown said, we have success coaches who complement our advising team, but we have success coaches embedded at our state colleges helping students as early as possible, because we know that the career confirmation of those students before that 30 hours, before they declare a major, that we can get them on plan, get them in the right plan, get their prerequisites done, and get more timely completion and success for these students. And finally, university-wide, imagine all the student success initiatives that we're having to do to really support timely completion of these students. We too have an incredible advising model. We went through a transformation of reimagining what university advising and coaching means at the university and how they complement and support one another, whereas our advising ratio is really tough to crack, but we're working on that. and that's where our coaches come in. We've developed an entire peer support network through a number of student services, through peer coaching, through peer mentoring. We now have peers working with our counseling center, our counseling and psychological services to help students, in addition to the 24/7 virtual counseling center that is available to all students. We have to the experiential learning and internship discussion that's been going on, we have a very concentrated high-impact practices initiative where we're requiring students to have some sort of high-impact practice. So the minute the students come in the door, they're connected to Handshake through our experiential learning services program, where they're encouraged to make sure that they sign up through Handshake, much like our employers and industry partners do, so that they can seek an internship, some of which are paid, some of which are unpaid, and even departments can participate in that program. Another big organizational change for us this year has been that we've now put all transfer students under one umbrella that really provides a comprehensive transfer experience, no matter where these students come from, a very comprehensive website for all resources in one location for students to know, and a brand new transfer center on the campus. And then in addition to some of the initiatives that we need, as you might guess, we define a business process that's necessary. And I mentioned our transfer summary report that is now scanned. We now have a transfer credit evaluation process and a transfer equivalency portal so that students know before they get in here into the university what's going to be accepted, so we'd have reduced credit loss and so we can maximize their success there. And in part talking about these is that as we develop these business processes, we have to find the technology to support them, especially at the scalable level that we're at. And so it's been fascinating for us to really look at the student success initiatives and how we support these students for timely completion. And now I will turn it over to Brian Boyd, our registrar.
Good morning, Chair Mariano, good to see you. Good to see you, members of the committee. Thank you for having us here. I'd like to talk a little bit about ways that we in the university community at UCF mitigate excess hours and help students avoid that situation. Just jump to, you can see from the slide above here, you can kind of see some trends that across the last several academic years. This most recent academic year, we've got a little bit of an uptick, and we think there may be some artifacts of the pandemic during that time. That's also a cohort of students that was back when the threshold was set at 110%. So we should be able to see some benefits from the recent legislative change from that as well. I mentioned in the slide here, I talk about training and monitoring and intervention. So I'm going to talk a little bit about really both. And we use a good combination, I think, of advising and services to students, as well as technology. And Pam mentioned some of those tools in her presentation. Our philosophy when it comes to educating students about excess hours is really to educate the campus community about excess hours. The more people on campus understand the details of excess hours, the better off the students are. They may be getting information or advice from an advisor, but they may be getting advice from a faculty member. They may be getting advice from, an employer on campus. But our goal is really to get out there and get the word out and make it known that this statute exists and how it works for students, and ways that they can monitor and monitor their progress towards excess hours. On this next slide here, I've got a couple of tools. I mentioned some technologies that we use. So the ability for students to be able to, today's student is very much a self-service generation student. They want to be able to have information at their fingertips 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so we want to be able to provide that resource and that service to them. So on the first graphic that's kind of up in the upper left there is a view that a student would see in their portal. When they log in, the student can actually see exactly what their threshold is, what their baseline is, what courses that they've brought into UCF as transfer courses, as well as what they've taken at UCF, will count towards excess hours and how they're counting. And they can see on a real-time basis what they have remaining towards excess hours. So that tool is available to students, all students. Every student receives that that access when they come in as a new student at UCF. In the slide in the lower right-hand corner, or the graphic in the lower right-hand corner, is we use a system called EAB, EAB Navigate, which is really, it's a system that allows us to have kind of a coordinated care network at the university. So advisors can enter information on students. We can pull information on students. When they come in to the registrar's office, we can log their intake, enter information that we have. But this is also a place where folks that work with students can issue alerts and open up a case. So in the item that I have highlighted there, if an advisor or somebody is meeting with a student and it becomes apparent that they might have some concern about excess hours, they can file a case and then an alert would come to our office and then we have the ability then to reach out to that student. So that that is a very helpful resource for our campus, and it puts us all in the same platform to be able to see that information and really coordinate our efforts around the student. We have direct contact. The students have direct contact with the registrar's office. A lot of times students will have questions about whether or not a transfer course should have counted towards excess hours or what the impact might be. And so we provide them an email account that they can contact us at, and we're able to then respond to that. We've got people that are that's their focus is excess hours and supporting students on that. I mentioned the Knight Success Grant here at the end. This is not necessarily directly related to excess hours, but it is something that sometimes we look to help our students when they get into trouble. As a university, we never want to have a student who is in their final semester or approaching their last semester who's unable to afford that semester and then not finish. And so this is kind of like a micro grant or a completion grant that that's available to us to be able to award those students. And it's we have the pleasure of being able to administer that out of the registrar's office, and we get tears of joy, literally. And a whole lot of gratitude from students. So it's a wonderful service that we have for students. It usually doesn't cost a lot of money. It might just be a couple $1,000s to get that student over the hump to get them to finish. So it's a great great tool and great resource. And that concludes. Any questions for the three of us?
Thank you so much. Members, do we have any questions? Representative Persons Malika, you're recognized.
Thank you, and thank you for the great presentation from the team from UCF. I had one follow-up question regarding your Emerging Success Initiative list, and one item talks about the transfer summary and transfer credit evaluation process. Can you expand a little on the processes that you currently have in place, and what if UCF doesn't offer a course that aligns with transfer credits? I remember when I went to college, I went with many transfer credits from high school, and I remember halfway through college, I got a notification, hey, we're recognizing this course now. Here's an extra 6 credits. So does, as you change the evaluation process, do current students also get a benefit from those changes?
You want me to take it? Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry.
You're recognized. Go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you for that question. We have a tool now that allows, when transfer credit comes in, the colleges are immediately prompted to evaluate any courses that we haven't seen before. So they have the ability then to do an evaluation electronically, and then a rule gets written to the system so that any subsequent students then will automatically get that transfer credit posted. So using automation, workflow, and electronic tools for that.
Your follow-up? You're recognized.
And is there anything that a student needs to do regarding or when the prior credit work gets sent to the university? Is this more of an automatic process and they can watch and observe what might be happening through the portal?
You're recognized.
Now there is not. That's the beauty of this process. We take on the assumption that when transfer credit comes in, that student would like that course not only evaluated for credit and not only be granted credit, but evaluated for it to be directly equivalent to a UCF course. So at one time, students would have to kind of petition for that and say, I brought this course over from a school from out of state, and I would like it to be equivalent. I think it might be, and they'd have to kind of go through a petition process, but now it's automatic.
Last follow-up. Yep,
you're recognized.
Is there any process if a credit for some reason is assigned, say, to an elective instead of to a course credit, is there a process where a student can petition that it might fit in a different category?
You're recognized.
Absolutely. They always can petition that, so absolutely. And along with that, we also provide, the students have kind of a heads-up display. They have the ability to see how courses from other institutions, the rules that we have. So as a student, you can plan transient work or, for prospective students, they can do that too.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions, members? Nope. I guess you guys were thorough. Thank you so much for traveling up here today. You guys did a great job, and grateful for your presentation. And just for kicks, one more time, go Knights. All right, members, that concludes today's agenda. Without opposition, Representative Tant moves we rise. Meeting adjourned.